I too had some reservations about accepting this invitation, since I've only been on the Chicago scene for a little over 8 months, and it's been a rather traumatic experience for me. And when I received the invitation, which stated that I was to come and in some way elaborate on what the Chicago project was all about and what my involvement was and goals, perhaps that was the first time I really had to stop and think about that one. So far, no one has required any type of evaluation of my ministry. And I think I would be less than honest if I didn't say that in the 8 months in Chicago, I've been pretty much swept along with the tide and haven't had too much opportunity to really reflect myself. And so these sessions, last night and today, have really provided for me an opportunity for some reflection. And the machine gun session last night over at Ted's, the questions that were thrown at me were really good for me, too. I guess I've been asked the embarrassing question, and I was asked also again at lunch today, what is the Chicago Project? There is no such thing really as the Chicago Project, because I think when we hear the word project, we think of some type of program that's in operation. Well, there is no Chicago Project. There is an LHRA representative on the scene in the Chicago area. I think it would be necessary for me to go into a little background on how I wound up in Chicago and why there is such a thing as the Chicago Project. A little over a year ago, the Northern Illinois District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, because of some pressure that was brought to bear upon it by the Chicago chapter of LHRAA, began to feel some of the tensions that existed between inner core city and the outer rim and suburbs, and didn't know quite how to approach the problem. A real barrier began to arise between congregations, between Lutheran pastors. And the Northern Illinois District, and I don't think this is an unfair characterization, had not really taken seriously the problem of racism. And so they felt that possibly it was necessary to add another staff member to the district staff who would deal specifically with the urban complex, urban problems, an urban man on the staff. They realized that they didn't have enough money to handle this type of ministry, and so they approached the Synod and asked for some financial assistance. The Synod then said that they would allocate $20,000 to the Northern Illinois District for setting up this type of ministry. It would be an experimental ministry set up for 3 years. Well, I don't know what happened at the Northern Illinois District level, but somehow they came to a recognition that they didn't have the expertise even for setting up the type of ministry they felt they needed. And so they contacted Lutheran Human Relations and asked Lutheran Human Relations if they would assume the responsibility for establishing this ministry in the Chicago area and providing whatever guidance was needed for the ministry. Meanwhile, guidelines for the ministry, a job description for the ministry, specific goals for the ministry, had been spelled out by the Board of Directors of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And these then were turned over to LHRAA by the Northern Illinois District. LHRA then refused the offer to sponsor such a ministry under those kinds of conditions. LHRA told the Northern Illinois District, if we are to establish such a this type of ministry in the Chicago metropolitan area. And if we're to supervise this project, then we think that we need to be given the freedom to develop the ministry as we see it needs to be developed. And secondly, LHRAA also insisted that whatever the ministry would have to be at least a pan-Lutheran ministry with ALC and LCA also involved. Evidently, then, the Northern Illinois District bought LHRAA's suggestion, went back to Synod, and I don't know what happened up at that level, but the Board of Directors of Synod also approved this, and so this, in effect, what happened then, $30,000 was made available to LHRAA, $10,000 from the Northern Illinois District, and $20,000 from the Board of, from Synod. Meanwhile, LHRAA had been in contact with ALC and with LCA, and finally, the way that the ministry then was set up was to be a three-year project with $50,000 available for the project over a three-year period, with the remaining amount of money coming from ALC and LCA. Now, when I arrived on the scene, without a job description and without any specific goals spelled out by LHRAA. I think basically LHRAA wanted in some way to promote its program of assimilation, which is what LHRAA has been committed to through all of these years. And I think that they saw my function in the city as enlisting people for work in the inner city, enlisting the talents of suburban people for tutoring programs in the inner city, for arranging for some kind of interchanges between blacks and whites, for dialogue, and for promoting the RSVP program, Rural Summer Vacation Program, where little inner city children, black children, go out into white suburban homes for a 1 or 2 week of vacation. I think basically they saw the ministry performing this type of function. And when I came in, I was pretty well geared in this way too, because through Selma, through New Orleans, and out in Altus, Oklahoma, involved in a migrant ministry out there, I had been pretty well committed to integration, to the whole program of assimilation of the black race into the social, economic, political mainstream of American life. So it was a rather, as I said, traumatic experience for me. When I began moving around the inner core of the city, I pretty well determined that I would have to spend the first 5 months, as some others have said here, simply listening. And that wasn't too difficult for me to do after 12 years of marriage. My wife taught me to listen, and I still find it difficult to get a word in edgewise. But so for 5 months, I did nothing but move around the city to find out what was happening. And what was happening was brand new to me. Black power, the whole new approach now to solve the identity crisis of blacks, the rising militancy, the call now for separation. This was all new to me and rather disturbing. And I had to go through, you know, some real inner struggles that I'm sure some of you may be beginning to go through now. But I spent 5 months simply establishing some type of contact with grassroots ghetto leaders, sitting in grassroots community organization meetings, attempting to assess the nature of the whole Chicago political arena, and that's a pretty difficult thing to figure out. Trying to capture the moods and the concerns and the fears of that whole cross-section of humanity that makes up the city, and at the same time attempting to become familiarizing myself with the approaches and programs of civic and church and government organizations that were already on the scene. Spent just a lot of time listening to black power advocates, and I was very thankful for inner city pastors here who had some of these contacts already and who introduced me and made it possible for me to sit in on some of the real inner circle gatherings. I spent just many a day walking through these Robert Taylor high rises, 16 stories up, waiting 20 minutes, 25 minutes for elevators, talking with ADC mothers, through Pastor Larry Morkert down at Holy Trinity Lutheran Church. I was able to get in on some of the work that was being done with the gangs, through John Fry at First Presbyterian Church, which is the headquarters of the Blackstone Rangers, and through Pastor Morkert himself, who's working with the gang structures in his area. And was able to sit down with two or three gang leaders and for 2 or 3 hours drinking coffee, sometimes wine, just sharing. And of course, the black pastors were very helpful too. And I thought it was rather amazing that, even in a, when we're talking about black pastors, that I found kind of quite a different mood among the black pastors, depending upon where they were located. So that a pastor who was in a hardcore ghetto who was black would reflect one mood, and another pastor, black pastor, who was out here in a economically a middle-class black neighborhood would reflect a different mood. He was in a different place in terms of the movement. I can't begin to list all of the host of, quotation marks, experts that I met with, and through LHRAA I was given an expense account which permitted me to invite some of these people to lunch, to take them out to lunch in this type of setting. So we met with Ed Marciniak, who was head of the Chicago Human Relations Commission appointed by the mayor, and people like this, people out of the Church Federation. I spent some time over at the Urban Training Center. These are all the places that I went over a 5-month period in an attempt to find out what's happening, what's going on here. And from there, to go from there then in developing what I felt my peculiar ministry ought to be. Now, I would have to say that while I was doing this, it appeared that there was such a great amount of frustration in the Chicago area, especially among Lutheran clergy. But it appeared to me, shortly after I arrived on the scene, that they were waiting, just waiting for somebody to come in. And this Chicago Project LHRA seemed to be it. So that during this 5 months, when I said I was devoting my time to listening, already demands were being made upon me, and demands for some type of services, for some type of ministry that I really didn't feel capable of performing. But nevertheless, I responded to those requests. And I just mentioned that because I think it reflected, as I said before, the frustration, especially of pastors, the bind that they really found themselves caught up in, the paralysis because of fears and so on. And I think that they were hoping that in some way whoever was the Chicago Project man would be able to perform some type of ministry to them. Well, after 5 months on the scene, I found out that the Chicago Project could not really reflect the old aims of LHRA because it was a different ball of wax now, a different game. RSVP, last summer, already we began to have difficulty in getting small black children to go out into suburban areas because the black pastors said, enough of that, enough of this paternalism, enough of these programs, which in effect, you see, make no contribution to the identity crisis that we're facing, but rather perpetuate it and make the problem that much worse. So already last summer we had difficulty getting enough children from the inner city to go out to meet the demands of families who were willing to host these children out in the suburban communities. We also found that a real unwillingness already beginning to develop on the part of blacks in terms of the old dialogue approach, sitting down with white people and hoping some way that they'll discover that you're a human being and maybe some channels of communication can be opened. So the old LHRA approach was really out. Now let me divert here a little bit, because Tim mentioned that we're living in a mansion, and this has been kind of a godsend for us. The mansion is the old Leopold Mansion, for those of you who remember your criminal history and Darrow, the Loeb Leopold murder trial. And it's located in Hyde Park, which is kind of the model community in Chicago, because this is the integrated community in Chicago, about 60% black and 40% white, really due to the influence and the power of Chicago University, which is in the Hyde Park area, and this is the community that Chicago likes to hold up. Of course, it's pretty much of a facade, and there's not really integration even in this community. But this mansion is located there. It's owned by the English District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. They had established a congregation there some years ago, back in the 40s. And the congregation prospered for a while, and that congregation was, I think, advertised as the church in a mansion. You know, this was one place you could go to get in the mansion before you went to the mansions. And this congregation prospered for a while, but then when the neighborhood began to change, the congregation didn't change, and people simply moved out. The congregation pretty well disintegrated. The English District had this piece of property on their hands. The house hadn't really been used in about 4 or 5 years. It was hadn't been kept up. It was pretty well dilapidated. But when they heard about the Chicago Project, they said, "Here, we'll offer you this center for your Chicago Project." And so that was great. When we came to Chicago that first day to our mansion, we heard we were going to move into a mansion. We were all excited, and after we were there for 5 minutes, my wife cried. But I say that the house has been a godsend for us, and we've made some improvements. Again, thanks to the generosity of the English District, we've renovated the house. We put a new roof on so it doesn't leak anymore. We were able to put the potties away after a while because we got all the plumbing fixed. And what we've done now, we have a chapel downstairs, very small, and we're using practically all of our room, but up on the third floor, they got a ballroom, we're in the process of making that into a dormitory, because since we've been there, as you said, a flop house, it's not really a flop house, we found that there were just a tremendous number of people in need, looking for ministry, you know, some kind of pastoral ministry, and who really didn't seem to be finding it in the church. And I don't know whether because of our commitment, whether simply we were free from the organizational structure of a congregation, but in some way they were attracted here. I guess they felt that I was free enough to give them the type of ministry they needed. I don't know. We had some of these people who would just move in with us for 3 or 4 days, and right now we have some other residents who are living there on a permanent basis. So we have kind of a Christian live-in going there. We're experimenting with community. We really don't know where we're headed. It's just kind of a venture of faith. This summer there'll be five college students who'll be moving in with us for the summer, and eight high school kids for the summer. So it's going to be wild, but it keeps my wife in shape. But the house itself is so big that it's become kind of a gathering place, a center for pastors. It's been the place where we can now begin to bring together pastors to discover each other, to find out that they have common agonies, and also that they have a common ecstasy, and very common problems, which they can begin working out. Now, I have not arrived at the point where I'm a strategist or a tactician. I guess I'm still, Reverend Vivian called last night, what was that other word that he used? The therapist? The therapist, because I think I'm performing a pretty traditional kind of pastoral ministry at this point. I'm not dealing with the political structure or the economic structure, except in terms of personal involvement and Operation Breadbasket, other things like that. But I see my function at this time, at this particular time, and we may, finally become strategists and tacticians, but at this time, I see myself as bringing together people who have reached, a certain level in terms of Christian commitment, who to some degree have become frustrated in what they consider the church's lack of social concern and involvement, and who are ready to act and to do. And we're talking about pastors, we're talking about lay people, we're talking about students, and these people have all kinds of talents, resources, abilities. And so we provide the opportunity for them to come together and together, to minister to each other, and together to develop whatever tactics and strategy they want to develop for their action. So I would consider myself kind of a convener, a stimulator, a person who perhaps sits down on a one-to-one basis to talk with a pastor about what the opportunities may be for him in working together with other pastors in a geographical area. Basically, that's been my ministry up to this point. I just wrote a report. It's not an evaluation, and I entitled it The Emerging Shape of the Chicago Ministry, which simply indicates I don't know what shape the Chicago Project Ministry has taken yet. Our first program is sponsored by Chicago Project. Is going to happen soon. And finally, we're going to have something to show, to synodical officials, district officials, and so on, that we're doing something. On April 4th and 5th, the Chicago Project LHRA will be sponsoring an emergency conference, which will be held at Camp Augustana, which is just outside of, not too far from Chicago, and to which we are inviting all of the Lutheran pastors in the greater Chicago area, and also district executives and staff members. This conference really arises out of the fact that I had a number of telephone calls from pastors who were concerned about this summer, and who thought it would be necessary for us to get together, to begin talking about the eventualities of the summer. Most of these were inner city men. So we had a meeting, one gathering, one Monday night at the mansion. We had about 23, 24 at the gathering. Some wives came. I think some of the fears were expressed, some, real personal fears of pastors' wives who are in the city, who really think the whole thing is going to blow up, and they don't know quite what to do. And there's Pastor Nicola over there at Our Redeemer, whose wife is pregnant, and he's convinced that the city's going to burn this summer, and he doesn't know quite what to do. So a number of men like this. So we began talking, about the necessity for making some kind of plans for survival this summer, and at the same time recognizing that we have a ministry in the midst of the fires. And what we're beginning to do now is rolling bandages, you mentioned, and we've already selected sites, churches, which will serve as hospitals. We're going to do this in conjunction with other organizations like the Red Cross and so on, that are already also thinking about this and making plans for this summer. And we'll be stockpiling medical supplies, beginning to line up people who will be able to function in some sort of helpful way this summer, nurses and so on. These things are happening. But at the same time, we had to talk about what do we do now, and then the Kerner Commission report came out, this big dramatic report. Finally, we realized that the problem is white racism, and it's brand new now. So, let's begin to zero in on this. And this conference then was set up out of this very small meeting that we had. And I think the interesting thing about the conference is that we approached all district executives, presidents, for their blessing on this conference, and we asked them to send out letters which would commend this conference to their men. And for the first time, without going through a lot of painful discussion and attempting to give the rationale for the conference some kind of legitimacy, it took us 5 minutes to get a district president to say, yes, we need this, you know, and another district president to say, yes, we need this. So we'll be holding this conference on April 15th and 16th. What we hope comes out of this, and we'll be kind of manipulating, we're not, you know, this won't be the kind of conference where the spirit, you know, we'll let the spirit move where he wills, but we're going to be manipulating to some extent. And we hope that out of this is going to come some coalitions between pastors and congregations in geographical areas, that together, you know, these coalitions will begin to take very seriously developing a positive, structured, intentional mission strategy for dealing with the problems of the white community and the white congregation. The whole purpose of the conference is, we see it, to kind of deepen the perception of the white problem, and that is a brand new area for us. We've all been busy analyzing the black ghetto and black people. Well, you know, we've never really stopped to analyze ourselves or to analyze the white community. Now all of a sudden we have to do this, and when we haven't done it, we don't understand ourselves even, nor do we understand the white community. And Stan Hallett perhaps began to give us some insights today. So we hope to deepen the perception of the problem in the white communities. We hope to establish these geographic coalitions, bases of communication, which will then enable some kind of corporate mission in dealing with the white problem. And that's about where we're at now. And I wanted to say so many things that have already been said. You know, everybody who's gone on before has stole my thunder, so I hope that I, you know, kind of tackle this thing from a little bit different approach.